Daniel Wallach joins us. He's a gaming law and sports betting attorney. He's a legal analyst at The Athletic. Daniel, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thank you for inviting me on to talk about the Zion Williamson case.
Hey, no problem. And I'm sorry Strudz isn't here. I know Connor was joking that you were asking. Yeah, that's indeed the Jason Strudwick from New York Ranger fame.
Yeah, I've got a lot of Jaromir Jagr and Tom Rennie era questions to ask him about. But I'm also partial to probably one of Edmonton's great citizens, Mark Messier. And as a Rangers fan, that was the golden era. And as someone who grew up in Long Island around the New York Islanders, I get into a lot of debates with people about what's the greatest dynasty in the history of hockey. And a lot of Islander fans will say, well, the 79 through 84 Islanders, no, nothing tops the Edmonton Oilers Stanley Cup era from 84 through 90 in the history of the game, particularly in the post-expansion era.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Daniel, you're winning fans, and we haven't even got into the interview. I love it. So let's get into the nuts and bolts of this. So his former marketing agent has served a request for admission in their lawsuit to admit that he received money, benefits, favors of other things of value to attend Duke University and to wear or use Nike and Adidas. So, and I think the last word of your tweet was, that escalated quickly. So what do you make of this? What's coming next?
Well, she's basically throwing a Molotov cocktail in the middle of the lawsuit, and I think it's being motivated by virtue of her perception that her case is weakening, and it's weakening for two reasons. While you discussed, while you framed this originally in the opening as Zion Williamson looking to change agents and back out of a deal, this was a very unusual contract and one that probably violates North Carolina law. In the United States, we have a number of athlete agents statutes that are designed to protect collegiate players from unscrupulous agents. And in order to have any kind of interaction with a student athlete, an agent has to register with the Secretary of State and comply with certain kinds of disclosure requirements to basically create a more level playing field between the agent and the athlete. And the allegation that Zion Williamson's made in this case a year ago when he filed a lawsuit is that the contract that he signed with her was in violation of the North Carolina Uniform Athlete Agents Act, because when he signed that agreement, he was still a student athlete and she was not a registered agent. And the remedy under this statute is to have the contract declared void. She tells a different story, that because he declared for the NBA draft, he had already forfeited his remaining eligibility and was no longer what would fairly be characterized as a quote unquote student athlete. So that's sort of the, you know, differing stories that have been put into play here. But the reason why her case is weakening is that a third person filed a lawsuit last month against Gina Ford, alleging that she breached an oral agreement to pay him a 5% finder's fee for brokering the deal between her and Zion Williamson. And in that lawsuit, the runner or the intermediary alleges that the initial contact between Gina Ford and Zion Williamson took place in January of 2019, 3 months before he declared for the NBA draft and while he was unquestionably still a student athlete. Now, the meeting wasn't with Zion himself, but it was with his mother and his stepfather, who play a very important and integral role in his decisions on hiring agents, what school to attend. And this North Carolina statute prohibits even indirect contact with the student athlete. And, you know, you can't get closer to a student athlete than mom or dad. So I believe that kind of contact would cause an invalidation of this contract, because she never registered. So that happened only a few weeks ago, and I think that there's a cause and effect here, that with the walls closing in, she may be throwing up, you could call it a Hail Mary, which I did. I think it's more appropriately a Molotov cocktail designed to basically, you know, blow up this whole thing into a national and continental story, which it's become over the last 2 days. So, you know, the prospect of ensnaring Duke and Mike Krzyzewski and morphing into a broader scandal, I think is partially by design to bring him to the settlement table to pony up a little bit, a lot more money, because she has her hooks into him on a lifetime deal. This is no ordinary agency contract. Players leave agents all the time for new agents, and the only thing that the agent is owed is money on the last deal he negotiated. But this contract can't be terminated. It's by its own terms, non-terminable. So she claims that she's entitled to damages in excess of $100 million because she's entitled to 15% of all of his off-the-court earnings for the balance of his career. And by filing this lawsuit and by opening up the gates of hell 2 days ago with these document requests, I think her future as an NBA marketing agent is really not something I have a high degree of confidence in. She's basically pushed all of her chips in the middle of the table on this case and betting on the fact that somehow she's going to leverage a multi-million dollar settlement. And I don't think she's looking for $3 or $4 million. I think we're talking in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 million. So I think that's why she's ratcheted up the pressure with some of these new document requests, which may be nothing more than a fishing expedition looking for stuff.
We are joined by a legal analyst from The Athletic, Daniel Wallach. So, Daniel, when you look at this and you break down these contracts, did the original contract that you say how it's so different, it's unlike any other one, so did she pull a fast one on her own client? Is this kind of shady in itself? And maybe you have a young, inexperienced Williamson and him and his family, and they're like, okay, well, this seems normal. But like a lot of people, maybe there's 80 pages and you don't read the fine print. And I know someone will say, well, that's your fault for not doing it. But is there any sort of guidelines for the scruples of having a contract that should be near to the standard?
No, this is not like, let's say in real estate deals, when you buy or sell a home, there's a standard contract that all real estate agents and buyers and sellers follow. In the world of, you know, professional sports, and even in pro sports, you have standard player contracts, but the world of agencies, agents, and athletes is pretty much, largely unregulated as to the type of contractual terms that have to be included. These uniform athlete agent laws mandate certain disclosures, but there's no requirement that it contain a term of no greater than 2 years or 3 years. So there's no guidelines on how long of a contract these agency deals can be. And she's not looking out for her own client, because Zion isn't her client until he signs the deal. So during the negotiation over the terms of this marketing agreement, they're basically at opposite ends of the negotiating table. She has superior influence over him because she's a sophisticated businesswoman, and he's an 18-year-old college kid. And the grave mistake that was made here is that Williamson's family didn't hire a lawyer to review the contract, because no lawyer would have allowed his client, especially with his marketing potential, to lock himself into an agent for the balance of his career. It was just a major mistake by Zion Williamson and his family. But luckily for him, I think he might be bailed out by this North Carolina law that's designed to protect student athletes. And it was a big battle early on as to where this lawsuit would be litigated. She tried to bring the case in Florida for breach of contract to run away from this North Carolina statute. She's claiming that Florida law applies. Zion wants to take advantage of this favorable North Carolina law, so he filed a lawsuit in North Carolina. And as a result of all this recent procedural jockeying, the case will proceed in North Carolina, but not Florida, which is a significant advantage to Zion Williamson. And I think that also played a major part in the desperation ploy that this agent has pulled within the last couple of days. I think she's trying to get this settled because the walls are closing in legally, at least from my vantage point.
So, Daniel, what do you think the outcome of this is? Just she takes, I don't know, $30 million, $20 million? What do you think is the number? And do you think she will get further clients, or is her reputation tarnished from this?
Oh, I mean, it's tarnished. Who wants to sign with an agent who's going to turn around and sue you a day later or a week later? It's not worth the trouble. I think her name is permanently tarnished, at least in the in basketball circles. She's represented famous athletes before, like Usain Bolt, but she's a relative newcomer to NBA circles. And I think he's her only one of a few significant NBA clients she has. So she's kind of a burgeoning NBA player marketing agent. And this this situation will pretty much put a stop or quench any possible career prospects in representing other NBA players. I think her name becomes, you know, like permanently tarnished, at least within that industry. So that means that she has a lot more riding on this litigation, because she can't just simply take her loss and move on to fight another day and get new clients. There will be no new clients. So it's one thing to say, well, maybe it's fair that she gets $30 million, but why should Williamson have to pony up that amount of money? He hasn't earned anywhere near that yet. And he believes, rightfully so, that I think he has a very strong claim under this North Carolina law. The settlement value of this case to Ford was a lot higher 2 months ago, before the North Carolina federal court denied her motion to dismiss, and before this new person interceded and filed his own lawsuit, which harmed her case against Williamson. So I think the leverage points in the case have shifted dramatically within the last 2 months. And, you know, the discovery requests that she served last week, the timing is everything. Why are they surfacing now and not a year ago? This case has been pending in the Florida court system since June of 2019, and she's waiting a year to file these requests. And not only that, he's under no obligation to even answer these discovery requests, because that case is on hold. It stayed as to Zion Williamson because he challenged personal jurisdiction. His argument was that the Florida court has no connection to this controversy, and he has appealed a ruling on that to an appellate court. And while that appeal is going forward, no action can be taken against Zion Williamson in the lower court in Florida. So these court filings were essentially about, you know, sounding the alarm in the public, and have no real practical impact on that litigation.
Daniel, this is really intriguing stuff. I know sometimes in the legality world, some people are like, oh, groan at it. But this is a unique one because it impacts so many people. And, you know, it's big money involved, of course, and a big-name player. So it's fascinating. Thanks so much for this, and I really enjoy reading your stuff.
I appreciate it, Jason. Thanks for having me on, and I'm sorry to, you know, subject your audience to rules of court procedure on a sports talk show. So
hey,
hopefully there
good,
won't
man.
Be too much more of that.
Well, sports and legalities now are intertwined rather frequently, as we've learned. So no problem with that at all. Thanks so much for your time, Daniel. Have a great day.
My pleasure. You as well, Jason.